What is happening? Is that wind? Are you proving wind exists?
No, I was raising the microphone higher.
Oh, okay.
And in honor of our podcast, I actually propped it up with my hardcover of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows.
Yeah. Love that book.
So if the sound is that much better, thank you, JK, for writing such a thick book.
Not as thick as Order of the Phoenix. That book is a beast. It's a fantastic beast.
Your book was not only captivating, it was the right height.
Welcome to
the Fantastic
Justice
Squad.
Super Bondo
Brother.
Friends.
The review stuff.
Welcome everybody to another episode of our show. I'm your host Sancho Panda. With me as always is Secret Alias Man. What's your alias today?
Today, my alias is JK rolling on the floor laughing.
How's that pass for a name? How are you going to get through, like, security points at an airport with that passport?
They have to be patient.
Apparently.
That's part of the job requirement when you work airport security is wait for the punchline. That's in their contract. I'm sure of it.
I'm sure it's in their training.
They're a funny bunch, those guys. That's been my experience.
You and I have had very different experiences at airports.
You and I remember Budapest very differently.
Man. So, what are we talking about today?
Today, we're talking about fantastic brother friends and where to download them.
Which, if you're listening, you already know. But if you're not listening, you can find us on iTunes.
Exactly.
Or on podomatic.com/fanbrofriends.
And you can spend some time with the second best fantastic show you could spend time with this week since that time that Snape came over to Harry's house and they watched How I Met Your Mother.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, hi, everyone.
Hi. We're talking Fantastic Beasts and where to find them.
So, for the two people on planet Earth who may not have seen the trailer and know
right
what we're talking about, is the heartwarming story from a first-time screenwriter about a skinny British guy who wears a scarf and a long coat, has a pretty female companion, a box that's bigger on the inside, and a stick that can do anything, who has to overcome not being Doctor Who. In order to defeat Colin Farrell's eyebrows of intimidation and survive long enough to one day grow up to invent Pokemon.
That's not how I remember the movie. But most of that's pretty accurate.
All right, then. It's a mystery in a manhunt sent in 1926, so it's CSI No Magi. And yay, house elf slavery. It's back.
It never stopped, actually.
That's true. Yeah.
All right, so I'm sure you're all thankful for that synopsis. Let's talk strengths and weaknesses, but you wanted us to do a superhero take on that. You didn't want to call it strengths and weaknesses anymore.
No, I just thought it would be cool to give it a better name, so let's give it a better name.
All right, so we're going to call it Superpowers and Achilles' Heels.
Yes.
And at the end of our Achilles' Heels discussion, which is the weaknesses, by the way, we will award a kryptonite sink to the worst of the worst weaknesses. Because as you all know, if you want to defeat Superman, you could use kryptonite or you could use a sink, but the most effective weapon would be a kryptonite sink.
Right. You have to weaken him with kryptonite and then hit him in the face with a sink. That's the plan.
Made of kryptonite. Yes.
That's a plan that makes Steve Rogers go, oh, I wish I had thought of that plan.
Well, I'm glad we got our Zack Snyder bashing out of the way early on. All right. Strengths and weaknesses, or as we're now calling them, and I already forgot, superpowers and Achilles' heels for this movie. Do you want to take the superpowers or Achilles' heels as we go back and forth?
I will do a superpower first, I suppose. Okay. I want to say that the superpower of this film is that the characters really are lovable.
Yeah.
And Ezra Miller just really hit the home run, knocked it out of the park. No one in this film was better than Ezra.
I agree. I thought it was going to be a miscast, but then I was like, wow.
And when he first appeared on screen, I wondered, you know, did he come too soon? Is he here too early? But no, he was perfect.
Oh, that's awesome. So what'd you like about his performance, if you can share without spoiling?
I just think he had that authentic, tortured soul where he felt like someone you actually would pity. And when you see Colin Farrell seem to treat him gently, and when you see other characters treat him gently, you understand it's because he does seem like someone that you would want to do that with. He seems like almost like the Aladdin character, where you just can't help but say, I hope things work out for you. I know you've had it rough up until now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he just has that face. It's like, we need to talk about Credence kind of a face.
Yeah, I was blown away. Like, it was the sort of role that it seems like you could give it to anyway, because there's not much to do, and he does it so well, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. All right, Achilles heel of this movie, and it's really an Achilles heel of all the Harry Potter's movies, but it's driving me nuts more and more. It's the inconsistencies of the wizarding magic in this world. Mm-hmm. Like, why is it that sometimes you talk when you say spells and sometimes you don't? Because in the books, it's sort of you learn how to use spells without talking. And so basically all the adults never talk when they use their spells, and all the kids do talk when they use their spells. And so when you see Eddie Redmayne's character as an adult say out loud some very memorable spells from past Harry Potter movies, you're like, oh, the spell. And then, but why is he saying it out loud? It just kind of bothers me.
It does strike me, like, if you were in a professional business meeting and someone was presenting their Excel spreadsheet and they said, 2 + 2 = 4.
Yeah. But I mean, if you love the magic of the books, that's always going to frustrate you about the movies, and it just kind of continued to do so. And I thought with J. Rowling writing the screenplay, it would kind of be a return to form instead, and it really wasn't. Those inconsistencies still happen, like wands connecting. That was only supposed to happen with wands that shared the same core, and yet it happens again in this movie, and you're like, I'm sorry, but I don't think those two people would have had wands with the same core.
Mm-hmm.
So instead it just happens like for any wizard fight now. And the dogs in your neighborhood are in an uproar about it, and I agree.
They're very upset.
Okay. Well, I could linger on that for a while, but let's go back to his drink. Oh, superpower. I'm bad at this.
Okay, superpower. Again, I'm going back to the characters because they were really just so well done. The character of Queenie.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I loved the most about the way that she was written is she can read minds.
Yeah.
But she is still so positive and so lovely as a person. And if you think about what it must be like to be able to read the minds of everyone that you come across, it's almost like being a policeman where you encounter sometimes the worst parts of humanity. Imagine what it would be to read the true thoughts of everyone. You could so easily form a certain opinion about humanity, but Queenie doesn't do that. She's still this wonderful light, and she still has this effervescent, almost floating personality that you just, it's so endearing, and you can't help but be drawn to, and it's just so wonderfully done. And when Jacob can't help but be drawn to her, you completely understand why that is. And that was handled so, so well.
Yeah. So another weakness for me, I felt like although they captured the general feel of the time period pretty well, it was really obvious to me, like, the budget constraints and how the world was mostly like CGI balloon screen. Like, you could tell they didn't spend a lot of time on most of their sets to make them look authentic. And a lot of times the camera angles are cheating to not let you see what the world looks like around.
Yeah, and that was on my list of Achilles heels too, is the CGI at some points were so CGI-ish that it took me out of the film. I was in it, and then it kind of lost me.
Yeah, I guess I wondered if it was, like, budget constraints or time constraints, because you know they're going to make so much money off of this. Mm-hmm. Might as well do it all right. But there were so many scenes with special effects in it. I guess there was just no way to do them all justice without hiring another, you know, a whole other unit for it or something.
Although, it was great to see a gnome version of Hellboy. And Baby Groot.
You mean a goblin?
Yes. Uh-huh. And Baby Groot.
Yeah, yeah. Anytime I saw a single creature itself and I could remember its name from, you know, being the nerd who read every single entry from the textbook version that we Muggles were given by Albus Dumbledore through Comic Relief. And every time I saw one, I was like, ooh, it's that thingy. That was a lot of fun.
Which, by the way, you know when there's the scene about the pufferfish, the lion spiky thing, the Nundu?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Newt is saying, none of my animals are dangerous. Please don't hurt my creatures. They're not dangerous. So I looked up the Nundu.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what it says. This East African beast is arguably the most dangerous in the world. A gigantic leopard that moves silently despite its size and whose breath causes disease. Virulent enough to eliminate entire villages. It has never yet been subdued by fewer than 100 skilled wizards working together. I don't know what definition Newt uses to look up the word dangerous, but he's got one of these in his little snow globe. And he's like, no, it's fine. It's good. You know, don't open it, but it's fine. It's good.
Oh, man.
One of his creatures is called Swooping Evil, but it's okay. They're not dangerous.
It was a misnomer.
No.
Yeah. It's like the Black Mamba. Perfectly harmless, right?
So, this seems like a good time to play a game.
Okay.
So, you know how in the Harry Potter verse, you have the different houses. So, you have Hufflepuff, you have Slytherin, and in the new American Wizarding School, you've got names also.
Yeah, I think they're named after Old Spice deodorant, Bear Claw, and anyways.
They're named after donuts.
I'd be an apple fritter.
Yes. Jelly Phil. I want to know if you can tell the difference between a creature from the Potterverse or Pokemon.
Pokemon, Potterverse, Night Beast or Magic Bird. Can you tell which is which? What the heck is a Pickersnitch? Come on, JK or Pokemon? Yeah!
Oh, goodness. As I know very, very little about the Pokemon world, I think I'll do terribly in this. Let's do it.
All right. So this is a speed round. You have very little time to think about this. I'm going to say a name, and you have to say Potterverse or Pokemon. You ready?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Ashwinder.
Wait, Pottermon or Pokeverse? What is it?
Potterverse or Pokemon.
Okay, Potterverse.
Or Potter or Poke. I don't care.
Poker face.
All right. Ashwinder.
Potterverse.
Correct.
Brilliant.
Yay.
Billywig.
Potterverse.
Correct.
Brilliant.
Weedle.
I want to say Potterverse.
Absolutely not.
Wrong.
Oh, man. Should have listened to my gut.
Sandshrew.
Drew. Potterverse.
No.
Wrong.
I was going to guess that for all of them. I'm ruining your game.
Horklump.
That's got to be Potterverse.
Potterverse.
Brilliant.
Yay.
Dugbog.
Ah, Pokemon?
No.
Potterverse.
Dang.
Chizpurple.
Dang it. Since I don't know any Pokemon, if it sounds in any way familiar to me, I want to say Potterverse. That's why I keep guessing that. Potterverse.
Correct.
Brilliant.
Hoot Hoot.
Pokemon?
Pokemon.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Quillfish.
Wait, say that again?
Quillfish.
Potterverse.
Absolutely not.
Pokemon.
Dang it.
Grumpig.
This is terrible. Potterverse.
No.
Pokemon. Nogtail.
There's so many Pokemon players out there who are like really angry with me at this point. A Potterverse.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Pygmy Puff.
I feel no sense of accomplishment with any of these. That's Potterverse. Ginny Weasley had one.
Brilliant.
Stunfisk.
Pokemon.
Good.
Brilliant.
Turtwig.
Is anything like an earwig? Well, I'm gonna say Pokemon.
Pokemon.
Brilliant.
Dewgong.
Pokemon?
Yes.
Brilliant.
Alright. Last one.
How many were there? I'm exhausted.
Oh, it's a long list. Alright. This is for everything. I've decided.
I'm like rubbing my temples now. Okay.
This is winner take all. You ready?
Yes.
Kneasel.
Wait, say that again?
Kneasel.
Potterverse.
You win all of it!
Quite successfully, too, I might add. Most people vomit the first time.
Can't imagine why.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I know most of those creatures, but that was really trippy.
Cue John Williams' triumphant music.
Awesome.
I'm just glad you didn't make me throw out vile pume.
No one wants to do that.
All right, so let's talk about fantastic ghosts and how to bust them some more.
Are we still doing superpowers and Achilles heels? I've got a couple more Achilles heels.
All right.
I felt the difference of a story not being told from a certain person's perspective. Like, in the Potter movies, you experience everything, most everything, from his point of view. You mostly see what he sees. Very few times is your perspective away from him seeing other things. So when you mishear something he mishears, when you misunderstand something, it helps with the mystery. In this movie, sometimes to create mystery, the camera lies to you. And I didn't like that. I thought that it was less interesting to try and figure out. Does that make sense?
I can see that. There were times where I felt a little bit manipulated and things were slightly contrived.
Yeah, but you never feel that with Harry because the excuse is it's his perspective, which is never going to see everything. But when it's just a camera or the director and the script intentionally tricking us instead of tricking Harry and then through Harry us, it just feels different. It just wasn't as fun that way. But it was still a good mystery overall.
I think the difference might be someone saying, let me tell you a story of something that happened to me, and someone saying, let me tell you a story that a friend told me that happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
This seemed a little bit like the second one, where now we're suddenly in this other location, and now I'm going to withhold something because it's better for the story, as opposed to, these are things that are a mystery because Harry really didn't know them at this time.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, you know, I mean, it's just part of the necessity of the different type of story, but I felt the difference. Another superpower?
I liked the general world that it created and the history that it set up.
Yeah.
It really did sort of set out this banquet where you know that there's a lot yet to come. This is only the first course, and you're very grateful and you're excited and you're looking forward to what's next. And mm-hmm. and just the lengths that they went to create the backstory of this world, knowing you're going to pick it up from here and move forward, and how much of it that they worked in from our actual knowledge of American history and this fictional weaving in.
Your knowledge, maybe, not mine.
Well, we know about the Salem witches.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's true, yeah.
So here's a question. Do you know how many actual people were executed in Salem for being witches?
No, I don't.
20.
Wow.
However, over 200 were accused.
It's a good thing the person killing them had OCD. 20, that's a nice round number. We'll stop there. If we do 21, we'll have to go all the way to 40 or 50. It'll be a big mess.
Right. It's like, how many shades of gray should there be? I don't know. Let's make it easy for the audience.
Exactly.
So what I did like is that they weaved it into those events. So they created these wizard mercenaries called Scourers.
Mm-hmm.
Who didn't care so much about the actual guilt or innocence of the person, but they would torture and murder mages and no mages alike. And they were sort of Puritan judges So when the Makuso was established, is it Makuso? Sounds like Yakuza.
Yakuza, right? Yeah.
Yeah. It's the Magical Congress of the United States of America, which technically should be Makotsuosuwa.
Wait. Try and say it correctly.
Makotsuosuwa.
No. Like, try and really say it correctly.
Makusa.
Ooh, say it again.
Makusa.
There. It took a while to get there, but it was worth it.
So a lot of those scourers were executed for their brutal crimes.
Right.
So the ones that remained hid by exiling themselves and sort of hiding from the wizard community for decades and decades and decades. So by the time we get to this story, the 1920s, their descendants are probably the fanatics of the New Salem Philanthropic Society, which are the current sort of people on the steps of the courthouse with the signs riling everybody up into mob rule. And they're encouraging the anti-magic sentiment as revenge against the Makotsuosuwa. So that was a wonderful way to weave in the Salem witch trials that happened in the late 1600s all the way through the early 1900s and how that was still there. I really liked that.
Yeah, Jo always does her research really well, and I love how she weaves stuff together. And it's just going to keep getting better.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
So I have one other Achilles heel, but it's going to be in spoilers. Do you have any other thoughts you want to share before we do our rating?
Yeah, I think that for a movie that is definitely riding the Harry Potter franchise, this movie is not really for young kids.
No, it's not.
The themes are very pre-World War II. There's potential war, there's fear, oppression, hatred, there's no mixing of the races, there's pure bloods versus non-pure bloods. The themes are pretty adult. And my impression of this, even as I was thinking about it a day later, is that Harry Potter was an invitation to be young again and to have that feeling of magic and wonder. Fantastic Beasts is almost a mandate to face the darkness of adulthood.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
So it's a very, very different goal and tone that these films, I think, are going to take. And
J.K. Rowling is setting out to fix America. That's how it felt to me. I mean, we had an African-American woman president, you know, back in the 1920s to show like how much more forward-thinking in some ways the wizards were.
Right.
And yet not in others.
So, you know, my other Achilles heel is the ending, but we'll have to deal with that in spoilers. But for the most part, I just think if you're planning on taking young kids to this, also plan on explaining to them what some of the adult themes are about.
Right, because this one was PG-13, right?
Yes.
And part of the reason that I felt like that was a Achilles heel is not because of how dark it got, but because I was disappointed with the Potter franchise, that Order of the Phoenix was PG-13. And then to bring in more money, even though the books got darker, they scaled back in the last three movies and made them all PG. And that drove me nuts because it took away from some of the dramatic moments by not being able to be dark enough. So it's kind of retroactively made me upset at those movies again.
Oh, no.
Okay, like just one example. When Harry fights Drago in the bathroom in The Half-Blood Prince, he slices him like Mortal Kombat down at the center of his face and chest, and blood gushes out. And Harry freaks out because he just used a spell that he had no idea what it did. And the way it's done in the movie just takes away so much of how dramatically impactful that was and how much Harry felt like the book had betrayed him. So, and how important it was to get rid of it. So I just, you know, things like that. I was like, come on, guys. You're going to start with this whole new franchise and be PG-13 now because it's more trendy to do it. So it just kind of made me upset. So, panda rating on that note?
On that note, yeah, I can't quite put my finger on it, but there were definitely some times where I was sitting there thinking, I really, really want to love this movie to its fullest, but for some reason I'm not. And I can expound more on it in spoilers, but I'm going to give it a 2 panda rating.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. As a flip side of the coin, like, I was saying to myself, I'm enjoying this more than I should be. Because for me to be back in the Potter world, which I love, and to see all of the monsters, like, I was just geeking out the whole time. And so I was so enamored with so many moments of it that it kept me happy, even though I saw its gaping flaws. So two pandas as well. Two smiling pandas. But it was more fun than the two pandas suggest. If that's weird. That's weird.
Yeah, I would watch it again if it came Absolutely. On Netflix. Mm-hmm. But there was something that was intangible and yet important that was missing.
Yeah, yeah. And I think part of it, you were right with, you know, it's not the childlike joy and wonder anymore. It's the more darker themes. But then part of it is all the things we're going to discuss in spoilers, I'm sure.
Right.
So, spoiler talk?
Spoilers!
Spoilers! I told you before, when you do it here, it's twice. It happens and it's awkward. All right, do we want to talk about the elephant in the room?
Oh my god, Johnny Depp!
Okay, before we talk about him himself, one of the things that really bothered me about this movie was Ferris Bueller's character, it was hinted that he was a Grindelwald fanatic, and that was enough for me, for him to be a Grindelwald fanatic. And to... At the end of the movie, for it to be revealed, forget who the actual actor is, at the end of the movie, for it to be revealed that he was Grindelwald himself, took away the mystery and the dread of who Grindelwald is. Because now you can think back through the whole movie and say, like, oh, well, that was Grindelwald. Well, he's not that great of a wizard in this movie. Is he trying to hide how great he is? So it really bothered me that he couldn't have just been a fanatic. He could have been foreboding. He could have said, Grindelwald is right. And then we would be like, wow, who is this Grindelwald if he has this acolyte who's so powerful?
Right. They tried to Kaiser Soze it.
Yes. But yeah, with very little justification for it in the movie.
Yeah, I agree. It would have been much better if you capture one follower of Moriarty and then a better follower of Moriarty and you slowly work up the chain, but there is an actual Moriarty at the top of all of it.
Yes, and also, before we get to the Y Depp, before we get to that, if it's that easy to execute wizards for lesser crimes, why don't they just execute him right there? Is it because of international laws? Is it because he's wanted in other places and so that he has to be expedited?
Right.
Like, if they explain that, I'll buy it, but if not, it's like, I'm sorry. Let's just AK him right now. And I mean Avada Kedavra or an AK-47. Either one. Let's just kill him right now and be done with it. Ding dong, the warlock is dead.
Let's AK Rowling him.
So those two things put together, even without the actor, if they'd picked who I would have thought would be the best Grindelwald, if they went with, I don't know, who's a good German actor? Because when they were doing all the British actors for the Harry Potters, why can't they do a good German actor to be Grindelwald? Who would you pick?
Colonel Klink.
Yeah, he would have been better.
Christoph Waltz.
Oh, Christoph Waltz is the obvious choice, and he would have been amazing.
Except he can't come on screen without you thinking he's the villain.
Yeah, but it would have been at the end of the movie, so it wouldn't have mattered anyways. Even if we're going to say, let's have them do the reveal the way they did it. So, yeah, I think you could go with many other Germans and anyone. Anyone
well, it was still the Scooby-Doo ending where he basically peeled his face off and all the kids are like, Mr. McGillicuddy.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so that is clearly the kryptonite sink of this movie. And all of that is before we talk about who was cast to play Grindelwald. I'll let you know now. I've said my piece.
You know who should have been cast?
Who?
Chevy Chase.
Yes.
And he could turn around and they would all go, Griswold.
That would have been perfect.
But actually, I think Alexander Skarsgård would have been an incredible choice to play the young Griswold.
Wait, are we talking about Christmas Vacation now, or are we talking about Grindelwald?
All right, Grindelwald. But if you're looking for someone,
I'm just so confused. But wizards age
exactly.
Wizards age differently, and Dumbledore is 150 by the time we're reading about him. So I guess they would still be kind of old in the 20s.
All right, but if he's 150 in the 90s, and this is taking place 70 years before that, they're still in their 70s. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the photograph of Grindelwald from the book where he's young and blonde and handsome, mm-hmm. then take current day Alexander Skarsgård. He would be you could age him slightly, but he would be charismatic and he would be someone that you could see people following as a leader and a lot less, look at your face, you're evil.
Oh, man, it's so true.
Which in The Watchmen, that was the problem with Ozymandias, is as soon as he came on screen, you knew he was the villain. He just had that German evil look about him.
Yeah.
But Alexander Skarsgård would have been able to seem like the hero while actually being the villain. So why they went with Johnny Depp, I have no idea. But it took me completely out of the movie. And I just saw Jack Sparrow and I thought, why? Why?
Oh my gosh. How did he get that role?
I wanted him to turn around and say, no, today is the day you almost caught Grindelwald.
So that's why it's supposed to explain his... I think he might be the worst wizard I've ever seen.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm sure other people besides us will talk about this more in depth.
Yeah.
But, oh.
Oh, man.
Maybe it's because... you know, Helena Bonham Carter, and you can't have a franchise without both of them.
My goodness.
It's all right. Voldemort will kill him anyway.
For all of the great casting choices that they did, Eddie Redmayne was great. I mean, when you started listing superpowers of this movie and you started going through the cast, I thought you were going to go through the entire cast because everyone was great except for Johnny Depp.
You know that Queenie is a fine frenzy.
A fine frenzy?
The singer.
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, so the scene at the end where she has to part ways from Jacob, I so wanted her to start with, goodbye, my almost lover. But she did such an amazing job.
Yeah, everyone did. I loved the way that that Redmayne portrayed Newt.
Yeah.
Like his quirkiness and I just believed him. You know, it's so hard to do a character that's so different from who you know a person to be and then to still buy it completely.
Yeah.
And he does it great, and Johnny Depp does it maybe the worst of anyone ever.
Yeah.
So again, with all these great casting choices, who was the exec in the room who owed him a favor? Like, seriously.
Well, let me say something great about Eddie Redmayne.
Okay.
The way that he portrayed Newt was like Dr. Doolittle.
Yes.
And Steve Irwin.
Mm-hmm.
If they were Napoleon Dynamite. Yeah, that's a liger. It's like the best thing I've ever caught.
It's pretty much the most dangerous animal. Bred for its skills in magic. It works so well. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, that reminds me of, I forgot to mention, is another superpower of this movie. And I guess I couldn't have anyways because it's a spoiler, but the, I'm going to forget what it's called again, the Obscurus.
Mm-hmm.
So the way Jo created this beast, like she had to come up with it or had to look up the lore for it. But the way that it's dark magic that is created when a wizard is forced to not let their powers out, like that's just so cool. Like I just love the way that she comes up with how dark magic is created. Like the basilisk is like a toad sitting on some other kind of egg or something. I can't remember. But it's like every time you learn about the dark magic, it's just so fascinating and so creative.
Yeah. I almost feel like when it was finally revealed that he was that there should be an award for who wore it better as far as big black clouds with a face.
Mm-hmm.
So do we go with Parallax? Do we go with the villain from Doctor Strange? Do we go with Credence? I want to have the Oscar. Who wore it best?
I don't know. We recently saw Paranorman, and I thought the creepy witch child in that was so well done. So it was hard to appreciate this one as much. Yeah. I wish they'd taken some notes from Paranorman about how to do a creepy child possessed with evil magic.
But it was still a fun reveal.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there were still some wheels that turned, like, oh, that's why he killed the banker's son.
Right.
Because he had been humiliated by him. And you still have that, oh, moment. And that's always harder to do in the movies. And so I was okay with that. Yeah. It was still cool.
And we're not even sure that he's completely vanquished. I mean, there was that little wisp of, I'm still alive, smoke. Which I believe went to the island of Lost.
I don't know why I thought you were going to say misfit toys. Maybe it's because it's Christmas time.
Because to this day, no one can tell me what the black smoke on the island of Lost is.
That's true. Now we know.
But, you know, it's cool that he was a squib, which is someone born to two magical parents, but who he himself has no magic. And so they set him up that way, where his only value was to be sort of a street informant for Colin Farrell.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns out that he wasn't really a squib. He was more Jack-Jack.
If Jack-Jack were pure evil.
If Jack-Jack were Galactus.
I hear they're looking for new villains on the new Star Trek TV series. So maybe he can be right. An evil cloud in that.
Right. Star Trek V taught us nothing.
Oh.
But it does remind me, though, that the way that they had his death scene in the subway, the Makusa throws around death penalties and murder in subways pretty easy.
Yeah, and yet they don't kill Grindelwald. Which it shouldn't have been Grindelwald. It should have been a fanatic, and he should have been killed. That would have been awesome.
Yeah.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah, like let's take out this teenager, but Grindelwald himself, let's think about it. And yet, let's build an execution horror room of acid horror death by horror. Like, who built that? If Willy Wonka were a serial killer, they would have hired him to build that.
So what I thought it was at first was, in the Order of the Phoenix, there's the veil, which if you go through the veil, it's basically passing into the realm of the dead, and so you die. And Harry said that he could hear whispers coming from the veil. So mm-hmm. I thought this was like a version of that, because it seemed at first like she was looking at dead relatives. But then it turned into like this, just seeing some of her memories from the past. And so I just, then I was just confused.
Yeah,
it's like the blob that killed Tasha Yar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And like, does someone bring in a new chair every time? I mean... How does this work? The whole thing, like, did it not make you sort of question the irony? They have no trial for the woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then they sit her in a death chair where acid comes up all around her slowly. Isn't that exactly like someone tying you to a stake in Salem?
Yeah. But I mean, for that in particular, the executors were just receiving orders from Grindelwald. So it could be that he was just... you know, bypassing due process.
Yeah.
In other lawyer terms, I don't know. Ipso facto, ergo.
All right, so here's a question. Did you know that Colin Farrell was Grindelwald when he gave Ezra the Deathly Hallows necklace?
I thought that just meant he was a fanatic.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that was the clear giveaway that he was a fanatic. So I knew at that point that he was the bad guy, even though you already know it. But it was like, I see your true colors. You know, it's just... It was for the less light-witted in the audience, to put it politically correct.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you about the Colin Farrell character. It was a shame they couldn't leave him as just what he was, which was a very capable follower who mm-hmm. bought into the ultimate vision in the same way, sort of like, you know, Beatrix bought into Voldemort.
Yeah, yeah. Many of his followers, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so when he said lines like, I refuse to bow down any longer, it was so much like Magneto finally turning against humanity and telling Xavier, we're better than them, Charles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And like when he said, who does this law protect, us or our oppressors?
Right, yeah.
It's that scene from Blade where the Vampire Council is talking about how we have to live in peace and we have these treaties with the humans, and that one rebellious vampire says, they are our food.
Yeah.
And he doesn't understand why we are being subjugated by our food. We are above them. Why are we even having this conversation? And so I felt like that Colin Farrell character had every opportunity to be that passionate and that strong with that same ideology.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are great parallels.
Right. And so why not be the strong right-hand man? Why not be the Darth Vader?
I was about to say that. Yeah. because even though they did it poorly, Anakin totally bought into Palpatine's logic in the same way.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so that is why I felt like an entire potential Panda was lost, because they had that and they didn't do it.
Yeah. And you can only speculate, you know, was that Joe herself, or was that exec stepping in and saying the audience isn't going to be happy with just a secondary character? It needs to be the main villain of all the movies, because that's what happened with the Harry Potter movies. I don't know. But that's not exactly true, because Voldemort isn't even in Prisoner of Azkaban, and that book was amazing partially because of it.
Yes, but it is tempting as a writer to have the misdirect and the reveal where someone is actually the villain, but you don't realize they're the villain, because even in the Sorcerer's Stone, the teacher with the turban did that. So we have that now again. But I think I just wished we didn't do it again.
Yeah. I think we've been saying the same thing over and over again for most of our spoiler section. But it's just such a raw point. That's the why. Go ahead.
So the other thing I think that disappointed me a little bit was the ending. Not the Pokemon ending so much, where he basically says, Thunderbird, I choose you. And not so much the Scooby-Doo ending.
Right.
But the Men in Black ending.
Okay.
Uh-huh. The amnesia reign.
Instead of let's start working through the murky politics of what's going to have to happen now.
Right. Because if you're going to say sometimes when the genie is out of the bottle, it really is out of the bottle, you cannot put it back in. And we destroyed half of New York. We have to just go forward and deal with this now. That would have been interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, they wiped it all away with the Men in Black ending. And even the way that they did that, to me, rang very false.
Okay.
So you release the Thunderbird. It goes up in the clouds. It makes the magic rain happen. And when the rain falls, everyone who gets wet forgets all about this.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some wizards who go around the street and wave their wands at newspapers and change them.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, great. That works for everyone who was in the street getting rained on, or all of the newspapers, maybe, that were in the street.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the people who were in a cab on their way out of town, or who took a photograph, or made a phone call to someone out of town? Did the wizards go to the print shops and destroy all of the metal plates that print the newspapers? Did they get all of the prior test runs that were in the garbage at the printer? Because I worked in a print shop, and that happens. You print some stuff, it doesn't have the right amount of ink, you throw it away until the real run goes. Well, those things are still in the trash. Did they go around to all of the homes of people who had already bought the papers?
Yeah.
Especially the one bought by the guy who took a picture on his way out of town after calling his brother the senator, who also saw the big flying guy in the huge magic cloud above the huge magic dragon ball of energy across from the river, and who took a picture across from the river. I mean, there's just no way that you can cover all of this up. There just isn't. What about all of the people who were injured? All the people who are dead from all of the buildings that fell, or have massive internal bleeding, or lost limbs, or sent telegrams.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still, like, just to see that little bit of, oh, we've changed some of the newspapers on the street. That what about the people who were in their apartments who didn't get rained on, who might live, I don't know, in a closet under the stairs?
Well, that one's easy to explain. The humidity.
Ah.
Didn't have to be the rain itself. But no, I think part of what I love about magic in the Harry Potter novels is that it can't fix everything. There are very clear instances where magic has its limitations and you just have to suffer the consequences. So yeah, I was surprised when they just got Superman to fly around the world in reverse for a little while.
Yeah. And it occurred to me later, walking out of the theater, that if everyone in the Makusa gathered around and combined their powers and made a big, huge bubble, and with their combined powers created some magic that erased everything within the radius of this bubble, that I almost would have believed. But the magic rain, when not everyone got wet, it just didn't work.
I'm trying to think if I want to do Chocolate Rain or Purple Rain as a parody song.
Although it did make me laugh because I thought, okay, so it didn't work, right? It didn't erase all of the magic entirely. So there's still a section of New York City that might still have friendly monsters who live among humans and when maybe they're not being grouchy to them. So Hufflepuff, Snuffleupagus. Am I right?
Yeah.
Except there are still some, shall we say, streets that these creatures still exist.
Now I just want to see Newt Scamander on an episode of Sesame Street, like observing these creatures, trying to understand them, trying to figure out how Abby Kadabby's magic works.
Yeah. But one thing that I did kind of feel was a little bit heartfelt is, okay, if this magic didn't totally work, there's an upside because at the end where you see Jacob's bakery,
mm-hmm.
and he's making these little pastries that look like the creatures that for some reason he has in his head, but he doesn't know why.
Mm-hmm. Which is even more poignant because earlier in the movie he says, I would never come up with this stuff.
Exactly. Right. That's how he knows he's not dreaming.
It's good Joe writing right there.
Right. And so when Queenie comes in and she sees the creature-shaped pastries in the window, and then she sees him and he sees her, it's like nothing can totally erase the feelings that he had for her. Even all of this magic can't erase that. And it reminded me of what they told Harry about his parents, that love is the ancient magic.
Mm-hmm.
And that is stronger than amnesia rain.
Cue Huey Lewis.
Yeah.
Don't need money, don't need fame, don't need some crazy amnesia rain.
So, again, this movie had its ups and downs, but when it ended on that note, my heart just got all warm and fuzzy, and I thought, oh, yes, 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 yes. That was beautifully, poignantly perfect.
Yeah, well said.
Now, that being said, I'm not necessarily the biggest Harry Potter fan.
Mm-hmm.
But did you know that in the Teen Choice Awards for 2016, this lost the most anticipated movie? That's right, anticipated of 2016. Guess what it lost to?
Suicide Squad?
Yes!
It's ridiculous. Well, I'm sure most teens are happy with the movie. I'm sure most of them aren't as critical as we are of the ending. Probably.
Probably not.
I wonder who was excited to see Johnny Depp, who was like, ooh, what a cool reveal at the end. It's Johnny Depp. He's that great Sparrow guy.
His soon-to-be ex-wife who gets half of everything that he makes with this film.
Oh, man.
So, are you excited about the upcoming Dumbledore-Grindelwald Wars?
Oh, yeah, of course. I'm still excited about that, in spite of the casting choice. I'm really eager to see who they cast for Dumbledore. I loved the first Dumbledore, and I wasn't a big fan of the second one, so I'm glad we get a redo here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I like the little nods, too, like mentioning that Dumbledore was the guy who liked Newt Scamander and asked that he not be expelled and
right.
Other things like that.
Well, they hint that it was actually Leta Lestrange's fault.
Mm-hmm.
So he took the hit for what Leta Lestrange probably did, and I'm guessing Dumbledore knew it.
Right, yeah.
But that's what you get for dating a Lestrange.
When you're Lestrange, people use amnesia rain. I don't know. I've obviously reached the point where I'm out of comedic content, and so all I do is sing. Maybe we should move into the ending of our show.
Unless you have more magic up your sleeve.
I'm wearing short sleeves right now, so no.
You ride the short sleeves to school.
Do you have a battle cry for today?
We need an insect and a teapot.
He's the MacGyver of the Wizarding World. Yes. That's all I need to handle this situation. And then he's like, Stick from Daredevil, and bring me my tea. Thanks. Well,
what about you?
No battle cry. I just keep thinking of spells to shout out randomly. Bombarda, Petrivius Dracalis, Ferroverto. I just turned you into a cup.
Expectus, no got 'em.
I expect us a better movie next time. Yeah, it was good. I'm glad we saw it. I'm glad we got to talk about it. This was very satisfying. Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Money, for wanting to keep being earned by people to make this movie happen. Thanks, Money.
Thanks, Money.
Yeah, because if without money, people wouldn't be greedy for it, and they wouldn't have said, hey, let's make some more money off this Harry Potter franchise.
Did you thank the Lapalung and the Puffskeen and the Remora and the Deerencrawl and the Bindamon?
I don't even know which of those are actually Pokemon
and the Moth and the Clefairy and good night, Caterpie. Good night, Swirlflix.
I'm gonna thank our listeners. Good night,
Drifblim. Good night, Tuftwug. Good night, Mudkip and Nuzleaf and Dewgong and Weepinbell. Poliwrath and Bundemon.
I think you're just making up sounds now.
Good night.
Bye, everybody. Were those Pokemon?
I mixed them up. I had a long list.
Clearly. Well, I think we got enough at the beginning for our ending, so... we should be good to go.
Yeah.
Stopping in 3, 2, 1, stop.
Well, it doesn't matter when we stop. Hold on. No, it doesn't.
Reminds me of the pacifier from Sky High.
Oh, yeah.
I'd put that as one of my guilty pleasure movies. Like, it's so Disney, but it's the best Disney that Disney has done of that type. So, I love it.
Come on, having Linda Carter as the president.
Yes. That was great.
No, not the president. The principal of the high school.
The principal. Yeah. Yeah, I knew what you mean.
Although I would take Linda Carter as the president.
I think most people would take anyone as president right now.
She sits down with Putin and he says something political and she takes out her lasso. You want to try that again?
Tell the truth.
We can do this the hard
and
way.
And he's like, this is dream come true for me.
I'm going to tell you a very clean version of a David Chappelle joke.
Tell me I am naughty boy.
Where he talks about, if you had a lasso of truth and you're wearing that outfit, you don't want to wrap up men with that.
Yeah.
His joke goes on, but you get it.